Honestly, for some reason, when we started down in the end, I thought we're going to come back and win this game. You know, that's how I trust these guys. You know, when you have Bregman, Springer, Reddit, Correa, and the same thing, you know, something good's going to happen, and today was a great game.
Jose Altuve had a three-run blast last night as the Astros came back from a 3-0 hole. They beat the Twins last night 10-4. But the most interesting part of the game, as John McClain is with us, brought to you by Horn Solutions, was how angry George Springer got towards the end of this game. Before Altuve's home run, Springer struck out on a very questionable pitch, and they zoomed in on Springer following the home run, and Todd Callis felt like he had gotten over it, but he actually didn't.
That feels good for so many reasons, and now George not quite as frustrated.
So true.
Okay, he's still frustrated.
He's still frustrated because there was a very easy lip read about things I cannot say in any way on the air.
In a nutshell, basically every single insult from The Sopranos, that's what George Springer said.
Correa.
With a little F-bomb flavor at the beginning.
Correa struck out in the third or fourth inning and, like, really had to restrain himself. Didn't want to, I guess, anger our buddy Angel there. But it was a really sketchy call. Just credit Pineda's a boy. He's good. He bothers me.
Well, he's talented. Yeah, he's mercurial.
Yeah.
But he's a talented pitcher.
Good. There were a couple just beautiful. Some of the...
He had some really nice pitches.
It was like he was painting...
Yeah.
Like, I hate saying paint the corners, but like he was like painting
like
the entire box. Yeah, like a Rembrandt. If I were a car commercial, I would have said that Pineda is a Rembrandt. Not if I were an actual baseball fan, but if I were a car commercial, I would say that Pineda was painting the corners like a Rembrandt.
Well, when you're known for painting the ball with pine tar, you can do those kinds of things, right?
He painted that little imaginary box of pine tar. They should have made him brown spots.
The Texans are one day away from making their first pick in the 2019 NFL draft. All is quiet on the Jadeveon Clowney front. Now, J.J. Watt joined us on the show Tuesday. I had a few people text me and say, Mike, it sounded like J.J. was down on Clowney. I want you guys to be the judge of that. Here's Clowney when I asked him about the progress. Here's Watt when I asked him about Clowney's progress in his NFL career.
Things are just he was healthy. You know, he stayed relatively healthy more recently as opposed to earlier on in his career, which obviously from firsthand, I know how frustrating it can be to not be healthy, to not be out there, to be able to work on your craft, improve your craft. So I think that was a big thing for him, just being able to be out there, to be at practice, to be able to work and improve. And I think that makes a big difference when you're just able to stay out there and be on the field.
Did you guys feel doing the interview and John listening to that clip like Watt sounded more down on Clowney versus anything else he said?
I didn't hear it. I tried to hear it. I mean, he answered the question as he would answer, I think, any question where he's being a little bit guarded, I think, because he realizes that if he does say one thing or another, that people are going to interpret it in a million different ways. Hey, guess what? That's exactly what happened.
Yeah, I don't, Sean, dang it. I'm trying to turn my microphone on here. What the hell's going on?
It's banning you.
It did. It kept spitting me out. Anyway.
I like Paul, did not read much into that. I put this into the category of I wanted to ask JJ about Clowney because I think you have to at least once or twice. But professional athletes aren't really thrilled with talking about other guys when they know there's a big contract situation looming because it feels like a minefield.
Right. Like
for them
almost like is he criticizing the organization or not?
Yes.
I don't know. I felt like it was... Are we supposed to hear him light up with joy, like, every time he talks about one of his teammates? I didn't think that was any different than, like, if we had asked him about his girlfriend or anybody else. I feel like that's just kind of JJ's tone.
John, on the real, what does Watt think of Clowney?
Do they hate each other?
I've heard Watt talking about Clowney so many times, and that was no different. I think he sounded exactly like I would expect him to. Those guys get along fine. Last season was the first time they've been able to play together. It worked out really well for both of them. And, of course, he's not going to say anything about another guy's situation because it's business. And they've all been there or will be there if they're good players.
John, do you think J.J. and Jadeveon would sit down for a game of chess?
I don't know if they play chess. I have no clue. If they did play chess, I'm sure they would. They spend a lot of time together during the season.
Do you play chess?
No.
Okay. My dad plays chess. On the weekends.
I'm not smart enough to learn chess.
Oh, you're smart enough.
I used to play checkers.
Who plays chess?
Smart people.
Before that,
why my father plays chess.
Okay, before that,
I asked the random question: would Jadeveon Clowney and J.J. Watt sit down? You know,
play chess.
You know, like a couple of old fellows in the park playing a game of chess.
Yeah, neither of them seem like chess guys. Let me tell you something about defensive linemen: horrible chess players. Because generally, good defensive linemen, you want guys that are like, oh, there's a squirrel. I'm gonna go chase it. Oh, a bird in the sky. I'm gonna go chase that. Oh, hell yeah. Give me some of that. You got steak for dinner? I'm coming over. You don't want long-term planning. It's a pain in the ass.
So you're a checkers
guy. Too much
guy.
To anything. Oh yeah, not even checkers. My wife, look, I'm much more intelligent than my wife, but when it comes to board games, checkers, chess, she destroys me. Destroys me. Cause I like, when if it comes to long range planning or anything, I'm completely incompetent.
Next headline, folks. This was the moments of the night in sports. NBA playoffs game number 5. Oklahoma City is at Portland and Damian Lillard put the finishing touches on that series.
Tied at 115. Crowd rising to the feet. George will defend Lillard. Spread floor. Lillard with 47 tonight. Working it down to 2-1. A deep three. Oh! Blazers win the series, a walk-off three from Lillard. Damian Lillard from way downtown. Five away, the Blazers win 118-115. The most improbable, impossible three. For Lillard. Blazers win in 5. Shocking.
Blazers move on the Blazers television network. 118-115 was the final. Also last night, the Nuggets won, and also the Sixers and Raptors are advancing. Do you guys view the Blazers, the Sixers, or the Raptors as a threat to actually compete for the NBA championship?
Nope.
I see the Raptors as a threat to just making it an interesting series in the Eastern Conference Finals.
I see the Raptors as a threat. The problem is, even though they have Kawhi, they don't really have a history of being a team you trust in the postseason.
Oh, God, no. Not at all. But I keep wanting to say that's just flukish somehow. You can only fire so many coaches or GMs before it, at some point your tide's got to turn. Is it fair? Is it fair to me to say they're due? They're due for a competitive series?
Yes.
I was listening to NBA radio last week, and they were trying to determine what it'll take to get to Kawhi Leonard to come back. And everybody agreed it'll take a parade. Otherwise, he's gone.
I bet they would do that.
76ers are a fun team to watch.
They are.
They're good at, really good at times. They're controversial. They got some players that are spectacular, but I don't know if they're mature enough. And the Lillard thing, I watched that live. And then I watched a bunch of replays, and he said, well, he's 37 feet 2 inches. No, he's 38 feet. It's amazing. That shot, he took it from exactly where he wanted to take it, knew he could make it. And then I listened to their radio guy. He acted like he didn't think it was going in. Then, of course, he went crazy. And, of course, his reminiscence of what happened with the Rockets.
John, do you think it was a bad shot or a good shot?
I think it was a good shot because I think he knew exactly what he wanted to do. He faced him up. He went up, he got off a great shot, and then he acted like he was confident it was going in.
I felt the same way, and we'll have some stats in a moment, but here is what Playoff P had to say about the shot after the game.
Yeah. I mean, that's a bad shot. Care what anybody says, that's a bad shot. But, hey, he made it. That story won't be told that it was a bad shot. We live with that.
Okay. Here's my take on that. There are two guys in the league who that is not a bad shot for. One plays for the Warriors, Steph Curry, and the other is Damian Lillard. Because Damian Lillard he hits those shots. He can hit those shots.
I guess if you're Paul George, you just gotta say, like, all right. Yeah, like, Paul George did nothing wrong on it. Like, is he supposed to come out 8 feet beyond the arc and defend him out there? Like, that's a recipe for disaster right there. It's just, you're screwed. It's like, you gotta let Chris Paul take, or excuse me, you gotta let Damian Lillard take that shot. I guess the real question would be, would Lillard have faced extreme criticism for that shot if he had missed?
No.
I feel like he would have.
I don't think
taking
so.
It from that deep?
Would have gone to overtime. And here's,
if Harden had taken that shot, well, that's
Harden,
different.
Yes.
It's different, yeah.
Seth, you're gonna be blown away by this statistic. So, per NBA, Damian Lillard was 5 of 5 from 30 plus in this series. Or, per other statistics, he was 10 of 18 from 30-plus feet in this series. Either way, like, this is well within his comfort zone, yes, where he's shooting either 100% or over 50%. Yeah. That statistic blew my mind this morning because I figure, okay, maybe he hit like two or three or something like that.
Yeah, but how far was he?
37.
38.
I mean, there's a big difference
37?
Between 31 and 38.
True. But
that's a big difference.
From 30 plus.
It's like almost 7 feet.
The guy's great from long range, but you're right.
John McClain.
I can't make one from 7 feet. He's acting like that's no big deal.
John McClain is in with us, brought to you by Horn Solutions. We've spent a lot of time this week with the NFL draft only one day away here on Sports Radio 610 discussing, will the Texans trade up? Will they trade down? Let's talk about 23. Let's say they stay at number 23 right now, John. What is the most likely thing to happen if they stay at 23?
First of all, they're not trading up. Number two is they are taking the best tackle or corner who's available on their board, I believe. I think it would have to be somebody they had rated really highly to be there to take another position. Like Justin Reed last year, they were not interested in the safety. They just signed Tyrann Mathieu. They didn't know about Andre Howell's cancer, and they had a little depth. But when Justin Reed was there, they had to take him because they had him rated so much higher. Maybe that'll happen, but we all know they have glaring needs at left tackle and corner. And I think out of the first three rounds, they're going to get one tackle and at least two corners. And I think there's a very good chance they could trade down in the first round. And if they could pick up like maybe a third round pick or get back their fourth round pick. And if the trade up was for somebody wanted a quarterback, like say one of the quarterbacks fell and somebody like New England wanted him or the Chargers wanted him, then it would be a little stiffer price.
John, what are you going to do if the Texans trade out of the first round?
I'll be interested to see how many corners and offensive linemen they can get out of that.
There's a part of me that would actually get really excited about that. If they got some, it'd almost be like the equivalent of the Ricky Williams trade, except just like not for a first rounder, but like if somebody traded you just a ton to somebody loved that 23 and they gave you like a second, a third, and a fourth round pick for you to trade back into the second round.
That's the exact thing. If they, on the face of it, a trade down's not sexy, but once you find out what they got for, and if it's a lot, then you can easily talk yourself into it, especially if a lot of guys that we want are not there at 23.
Yeah.
It's a really good draft in the second round for corners and second, third for corners and offensive linemen.
Well, I know right now, if Greedy Williams is available and they trade back, there will be outrage locally.
Yes.
That's where I'm like, the LSU fan base is growing kind of fidgety about the fact that Greedy Williams isn't be talked about more here.
Okay, so John, if they stay at 23, you're saying, all right, top corner or offensive lineman available. Do you have any feeling, any sense right now, like, is it likely to be a DeAndre Baker? Is it likely to be a Cody Ford?
I have Cody, in my last mock draft, my official one, which I've turned in, I have Cody Ford gone. I have all the top linemen gone, top tackles gone, and I haven't taken DeAndre Baker, and I have Greedy Williams long gone.
It's I don't know how much you look at other mock drafts. It seems like that would be maybe you're a little more bullish on the offensive tackles than maybe some other people.
Low in the first round and in the second and the third, yeah. But I think they're desperate.
Yeah.
Because there's all these pass rushers going, well, who stops them? There's so many teams that need them. Like, I have my first one, Jonah Williams, going to the Giants. Then I have Juwan Taylor of the Jaguars. And then I have Andre Dillard going in the top 10. And can't remember who. And I have Cody Ford. And I have Dalton Risner as another first-round pick.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of those guys are versatile.
Yeah.
Other than Dillard, who's strictly left tackle. But and that's another reason teams like them. And that would be reaches on them compared to some of the others. But once you get your quarterbacks, your defensive linemen, you got to get those offensive tackles. And then because of guys like Ed Oliver and Quinnen Williams coming up the middle, you better get some guys inside who can block them too.
Peter King wrote on Monday, well, here's what he wrote. He has a mock draft in which he had the Texans moving up to 17 to take Andre Dillard. He also wrote that he is hearing Dillard is the top tackle on Houston's board. What was your reaction to that?
They're not trading up for Andre Dillard.
Yeah.
And you're convinced of this?
I'm convinced.
Let me ask you.
Now, if he was there at 22, which he won't be, but if he was there, they don't want to give up picks. They're trying to get more picks.
Would it make sense that he is their top guy?
Sure. He's the only left tackle out there, and that's where their desperate need is other than corner.
If we were having this conversation 2 years ago today, what would you have thought about the possibility of trading up for Deshaun Watson? Like, you've covered the NFL, John, for a really long time. Is this year like a notable difference for you in that you seem very convinced that they will not trade up, whereas in other years, the Texans have traded up? Will Fuller, Deshaun Watson?
When Reg Smith traded that high up to get Deshaun Watson, I was stunned.
So we would have had the same conversation the day before.
Andre Dillard is not Deshaun Watson.
Agreed. It's different because, right, and I think, like, the difference is, like, obviously a quarterback is a quarterback, but I think if you looked at Deshaun Watson, there are a lot of questions, you know, about how his game would transfer to the NFL, but you couldn't deny there was a certain electric appeal to it, the possibilities, the upside of what it might be, where the offensive line version of that is always going to be not as exciting as a quarterback, but I don't think you look at any of these offensive tackles and say that they have that kind of electric element as far as being an offensive tackle that they could bring. You don't look at any of these guys and think, like, wow, he's destined for greatness. You know, where Deshaun Watson, enough people thought, like, okay, he's destined for greatness. A lot of them didn't, but enough people thought that he was.
I mean, otherwise we wouldn't be talking about it because that guy would be going top three or top four. So if an offensive lineman was that caliber of player, we wouldn't even be talking about that guy for the whole offseason.
Right.
The whole offseason.
So where with quarterbacks, it's just different. Like that appeal, that intrigue and everything is just there.
I'm more just pointing out the idea that before a team trades up for anybody, it's not obvious they're going to trade up.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to go around and telling everybody, yeah, we're going to trade up.
I think, but
you have to trust people you've dealt with for years telling you the truth when, you make statements like I just have.
Well, and it's right. Read through the lines, damn it, Michael.
How about that?
Yeah, read between the lines.
With a 7:54 and 35 seconds on a Wednesday.
And it makes sense. Like, Mike, that makes me feel good that John is saying that because look at the situation the Texans are in. Is it appropriate to trade draft picks sometimes? Sure, of course it is. Although most of the time you should trade back, if anything. But the Texans are not your normal team. Like you just said, hey, you can never really predict when somebody's going to trade up. Okay, but I could probably predict that teams that didn't have a first or a second round pick last year are probably much, much less likely to turn up. Because the GM's always got a long-term perspective on things. The GM's got to think in terms of more than just next year. And when he's looking at his team and he's looking at his salaries and what he has to do in the future, he's looking at a gap for where there could be a first and a second round pick from last year on a rookie contract. He's going to have to pay a veteran free agent or something. He can't be trading away these picks.
Teams want a two to trade up, and they're not interested in giving up one of their twos.